So worker owners are more civically engaged. They volunteer more, they vote more, they're more politically active, etc., etc.
Welcome to The Emergence, a podcast asking the question, what is possible when we are connected and in control? In today's episode, I'm talking with ASU Professor Nigel Forrest on the function of worker co-ops engaging labor purposefully in the marketplace. At the core of The Emergence is the importance of labor's role in driving society rather than to be driven by it. Increasingly, the purpose in how we express our labor has been attached more to the bottom line of the employer and the shareholder than it has to the interest of the workers. Only until recently have I realized worker co-ops might be a toolset to help reverse this trend by democratizing the notion of the consumption of labor. Nigel Forrest is a postdoctoral research fellow in the School of Sustainability and School for the Future of Innovation in Society and manager of the Sustainable Local Food Economies and Enterprises Lab at Arizona State University. He earned his PhD in sustainability in 2015. I'm excited to bring Nigel onto the show to learn more about how worker co-ops can not only empower labor, but empower employers as well. Welcome to the show, Nigel. I appreciate you taking the time to chat.
Hi, Paul. Yeah, I'm very happy to talk to you. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, let's start this off by letting me ask you, what brought you to the study of worker co-op model in general?
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, I have a PhD in sustainability, which I came to somewhat later in my career, and changed career maybe a good 12 or so years ago. So my interest at that time was, how do we make the world a more sustainable place? And this brought together two of my long-standing interests, one being the environment, how do we create a healthy, strong environment, and the other being social justice. And sustainability brought these both together. Now, as I started to study sustainability and learn more about it at Arizona State University, my interest kind of started to shift to, okay, how do we make these things happen? And through a couple of professors there at ASU, I learned more about collective solutions, social transformation, and cooperatives. And cooperatives just struck me as being such a great fit with how do we bring about the transformation to more sustainable society, because the underlying, I think you can trace many of the unsustainabilities that we now face of inequality, climate change, health pandemics, etc., etc. You can trace many of these problems to the economic system that prevails across the world, and my thinking was we need an economic system that works for the people, and not for the 1%. So if we want a sustainable world, we need to address these underlying drivers: the economy, democracy, people having a say in their lives and what affects them. And if we don't address these two drivers of the economy and democracy, we can never hope to have a socially, environmentally, and economically sustainable world.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I always like to do on The Emergence, I always try to I always talk about the balance of you know, the three: the business, people, and government. And so, you know, the thing that struck me about worker co-op is that we talk about labor, but there's also my research on worker co-ops is the fact that it's good for business as well. So, you know, we have the kind of the visions of a sustainable world, and There's some mechanics, though, as well, that I do believe that seem to work, because I'm always about bringing people into the conversation, not really just trying to focus on one area. I want, you know, all business people to really consider the notion of a worker co-op, not just the environmentalists or the sustainability. Not that it's bad. I agree 100% with what you're talking about. But my argument always is that let's bring in a bigger group to embrace these ideas, maybe through a different lens of the fact of what can it do to the current economics? Because you talk about the 1%, that means there's 99% of businesses out there that are operators that want to do good business. They want to be able to grow and themselves. So it seems to me that worker co-op is a possible, something in the toolkit that they haven't necessarily thought about. And if you don't mind, I'm going to kind of bring a scenario in. I've been working with a gentleman that I've worked with over the years and with a company I work for, and he prints t-shirts. And he has a very small business, and it's just himself, and he has usually employs a couple of people. And he's having a very difficult time as a small business owner, being able to retain employees, because we know what's going on with the labor market here. And it seems like people are discovering they have more choice. Labor has more choice. And with being able to do like you're doing, telecommuting, when you think about it, all these different choices. So to start off and kick off this conversation, if we can break down the value to him as a business operator, as well as the value of the labor coming in, because his problem is that he doesn't have anything to really excite he just wants somebody to come in and do a good job and make a wage. And I've been talking to him, and he said he'd be open to a worker co-op model. So in breaking that down, to be able to retain an employee, is there a part of ownership that would be something to be exciting for them as the labor? And then if an employer can bring in labor that's excited about a job, isn't that something that works within itself? That's a kind of a model for worker co-op?
Absolutely. Worker co-ops, or more generally employee-owned businesses, but worker co-ops are a special case of that, and let's just focus on that. There are many studies out there. There's a growing amount of research done over the last couple of decades that show quite conclusively that worker co-ops are good for business. They in a number of different dimensions. They are more resilient. They are able to withstand economic downturns compared to more conventional businesses. They have longer lifetimes as a business, their longevity. They often can pay their employees more than the going rate. Mm. They have benefits for their productivity and for their levels of customer service, et cetera, and so a lot of these benefits for the business stem from worker co-op, from the empowerment that the workers within the business receive from the ownership and control that worker cooperatives give them.
Let's talk about the wages, because I've been doing a lot of research on the financing models for worker co-ops here recently and understanding how loans are working. And so say this small business sets up a worker co-op and you're saying that they can pay more. So how does that, I understand the fact of a worker feeling more like a partner and part of a company, that there would be that element of them wanting to be there. And that's the thing that's been driving me as the idea of a worker co-op, is that you feel a part of it. You're actually a part of the decision-making process. But how is it on the economic model where they would be able to pay more versus a traditional employee relationship?
Yeah. So let me clarify a bit here about worker co-ops. I think I said something like they pay more than the going rate. Now, If you take this on a business by business basis, you might actually find frequently that somebody in a worker co-op could actually earn more if they went and worked for a private business. What I was talking about is that worker cooperatives generally tend, or in the US, this is, they tend to be more prevalent in areas of lower overall pay, and in communities that are also on the lower end of the pay spectrum. So what you find in these worker cooperatives is that they're able to pay more than, they're able to pay, say, the living wage or above the living wage. Whereas in comparable businesses in these communities, minimum wage is the going rate. So it's not that, you couldn't go and find better pay rates in worker cooperatives, but generally, when you're looking at the aggregate, the going rate is the worker cooperatives tend to pay above the at or above the living wage.
Okay.
Now, but what is it then? So it might not be that workers are attracted to work in a worker co-op because they're going to earn bags more money. That's not the case. But what is it that attracts them? It's not just about the purely monetary rewards. It's about the job stability and the job quality and the other benefits that go with being a worker owner.
So I read something that about the 7 cooperative principles. One of them is the autonomy, and number 4, what I research is autonomy and independence. So, I've researched on that is that typically in a company you have a top down structure, right? So you have it's ran like a dictatorship, really. I mean that's how a traditional business model is, and I've actually had people tell me that before working for them, not my current employer at all, but, so that autonomy and independence. So basically on the decisions that are being made for the company, it's not so driven top down to where this is your specific job. It's about the fact that we're here as a team working together. And what we need to do is to get the overall mission done. It seems like it's something where people are more invested in the actual company itself, other beyond just the monetary.
Oh, absolutely. When you become an owner, it changes everything. You are investing in yourself. Generally, workers in worker co-ops, there's a much lower turnover because people, the workers are very committed to the business. They don't want to. They're in it for the long term. But going back to the job specialization, I guess this isn't totally different from smaller non-worker-owned businesses. But yes, in the smaller businesses, they can be run in a way that everybody is able to do everything within the business. So a good example there is in San Francisco, the Arizmendi Federation of Cooperatives, which includes 6 bakery cooperatives, retail bakeries. And each one of these is an independent business, a worker cooperative. But they're all run along similar lines. And each of them, they maybe employ 15, 20 people. And everybody in there is capable of doing, most of the jobs that need to be done. They can do the front of house service. They can do the baking. They can do the equipment maintenance. Mm. They can do the supply ordering, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, there's definitely more cross training and an ability to do what needs to be done. But that's not always the case.
Sure.
It depends on the type of business.
Yeah, I guess just like anything else,
And you know, something like a bakery is a bit easier to do that than, for example, so Arizmendi also started a construction cooperative.
Okay.
Now, within that, they found that having everybody within all of the worker owners being able to do all the different jobs was just impossible.
Because, yeah, that makes sense.
Because the difference between an electrician and a plumber and whatever is just too much, and too much training behind it. So it's not always the case, but I think you quite often find it in worker cooperatives that there is a lot of job rotation, and that keeps people interested. But also, you know, job control is there, or the control of the business. So if somebody feels strongly that they want to specialize in some area of the business, or there's some particular task that they don't like to do, then, you know, it's within their power to argue that within the business and work on the areas that they think they can contribute to best.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's actually really interesting, because really when you talk about the sustainability part of that, is that when these business entities are more in line with the interests of labor, and that can even scale up larger, is that they're tighter organizations, because then the people are doing the things that they feel that they're best suited for, which in addition adds to skill sets that they may not have had in the first place. So in the overall economy, you're creating more diverse skill sets. So it seems like with the worker co-op is that as you stitch all these things together, when you're empowering labor, not just through union protections, but actually allowing them to discover their true potential within these organizations, that grows organizations that are more that they're strengthened within the communities that they exist anyways. And when you have more organizations that are tighter in with their communities, it just seems like they all feed off of each other. The more worker co-ops that are done well, seems like they lead to a better bound community of employers.
Community. When you say community, you mean like the local geographic neighborhood community they're embedded in?
Yeah, basically, yes. And obviously, they've got to probably scale out, but yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. There are these so-called spillover effects of worker cooperatives. The research isn't really strong on this. Something that interests me. But you know, to what extent when the member, the owners of a business actually live in the community where the business is located, it creates these natural ties and concern for what happens in the community. And I think it works in both directions as well. So, and this can happen with small family-owned businesses as well. Mm-hmm. But I think the difference when you have a worker cooperative of, you know, maybe a business of 15, 20 employees, when those 15, 20 employees are also owners and they live in the community, that's 15 or 20 strong ties between the business and the community. Whereas, you know, if it's more of a family-owned business of 15, 20 employees, only maybe two or three of them are the owners. And so you have less ties.
Gotcha.
And you and the owners might not even live in the same locality as the business. So these kind of spillover effects to the community, I think can be quite significant. But like I said, the research, more research really needs to be done to create more evidence of these types of effect.
Yeah, and I'd read an article that you were cited in where in Arizona, I think this is as of a year ago or so, that out of 500,000 small businesses in Arizona, there's only 2 worker cooperatives. Is that still the same case?
Yes. I'm not totally up on the numbers, but I think it's probably hasn't changed a lot. Yeah.
What's in the way of that, would you say, in Arizona? Because I know different states are different, that they have different. What's specifically in Arizona, what do you feel is in the way of that?
Awareness. Awareness. People have very little knowledge of cooperatives and especially of worker cooperatives. So when somebody starts a business, their first thought is to do it like almost every other business has started. They do it as a single owner or maybe as a partnership at the most. And very often they're just not aware that there are other options open to them. So there was an interesting study done in Spain. I think it was in Galicia in the northwest of Spain. Okay. Spain has, relatively speaking, a lot more worker cooperatives.
Oh yeah, Mondragon. Yep,
including Mondragon, what the biggest cooperative conglomerate in the world.
Yeah.
And this study looked at, I think it was to do with public economic development within a region and its kind of incubator programs. And the researchers asked the participants in this incubator who the vast majority of them were creating regular privately owned businesses. And the research found that the reason that they weren't creating cooperatives is because they didn't know about it. They didn't know it was an option. And when it was put to them that this was an alternative, then the interest was very high. So the whole ecosystem, for startups, for entrepreneurship in general, is highly geared towards the individual entrepreneur creating a business for their own interests, and the other options are just not out there.
Yeah, so, and that's fascinating to me. So on the business side, okay, so an owner wants to get in. You know, we talk about the awareness. If they want to set up a business, and this is a thing I'm actually struggling with myself, I'm trying to understand. That's why I wanted to bring you on, is to help me with this, is that if I'm an owner and I want to make money and I invest my money or a team of investors, so basically the notion of a worker co-op is that I'm going to kind of filter out my ability to make money, because the more owners I have in a company, the less money I'm going to make. Is that... There's print shop, right? This guy has his own equipment. He has millions of dollars worth of equipment. But the thing is he tells me, he could live for the rest of 20 years and just do it by himself, but he wouldn't be able to grow it. And so if he brings this into a worker co-op and he brings these employees in as owners, then he's going to dilute his shares, correct?
It could be done in different ways. He could retain the majority or a large proportion of the value of the company, but he could bring in the worker owners as with much smaller monetary ownership. But the important thing is that you would have another class of shares that give them one member, one vote in the control of the business. So, you know, so we could separate the overall, his value that he's put into the company. And it's, this is a, you know, I think a kind of common problem with these. How do you transition? Is, how do I get my fair share out of what I have put into this business before I, you know, without just handing it all over to the workforce.
Yes.
So there are various ways to do this, but essentially it's about, you know, separating the kind of monetary value from the overall control. But ultimately you would want to lead to the workforce, perhaps over time, you know, buying up the shares in the company from the previous owners.
Yeah, and you know, there's an article that I'll link to in this episode that you're cited in, and the sustainability-innovation@asu.edu, and there's a quote in here that speaks specifically to this that is fascinating to me. It said, co-ops, by contrast, distribute any profits or losses to their members in proportion to their economic participation. Members who contribute more produce, purchase more groceries, or work more hours will receive a greater share of the profits. Now, that to me is fascinating. Is that where the fact that you can, because basically you're, in this instance, you're rewarding a person with a share of ownership for their participation. They're not just coming there and showing up and on Facebook, right? Is that kind of tie across all cooperatives to some degree?
Well, this is different depending on the type of the cooperative.
Okay.
Now, in a worker cooperative, what that economic participation means is how many hours did you work for the the business? So your share of the profits or your share of the revenue is dependent on your economic contribution in terms of hours worked.
Okay.
It's different in, for example, a consumer cooperative where the business is owned by the consumers. In this case, then the consumers might receive a share of the profits of the business, like once a year, in the form of a patronage check. Patronage is a term used to describe the disbursement of surplus that the business has made. So at the end of the year, the consumer members might receive a check for their share of the surplus that the business made. And the check they receive would be proportional to how much they purchased from the cooperative. REI, for example, is a consumer cooperative.
Okay.
That does this every year. All REI members receive a check. Not usually for very much, but it's proportional to how much you've spent at REI that year.
And what's REI again?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it's a recreational, you know, the outdoor retailer.
Oh, I got you. Okay, gotcha. Okay, yeah.
I can't remember what it's.
No, that's fine. That's fine. And so it's this model that's, I think, at the core of this that fascinates me about this. And I didn't really know. I knew about employer owned companies for forever, but I never really had the concept until about a couple of years ago about worker co-op. And the more I start to dive into it and kind of the things that I'm thinking about for the emergence is that there's such an alignment when you're talking about, it's all about the fact of your labor, you know, the labor you express and the labor that's consumed. And if it's validated, if your labor is validated of what you put towards something and you're validated with money, and then also not just money, about the fact of, you know what, you're doing a good job. You're actually helping build this company, and this company is providing a service for the community. And when you tie in these things where, you know, the hours worked or the consumer, it seems like it, as opposed to the shareholder or the owner really driving the marketplace. Now, the more that you get these worker co-ops that you have the labor as more part of the decision-making part of it, it's driven from the stakeholder, the true stakeholder, as opposed to, especially in the bigger implementations, the shareholder. I've written essays about the shareholder and the stakeholders before. And you kind of see where I'm talking about. There's the fact that, you know, something that's more resonant with the labor, the members is better for society in general.
Oh, I think this notion of, you know, greater distribution of ownership is much better for society in general. As we've already talked, it's good for the business. It's good for the individuals in the business because it brings, you know, a sense of responsibility, a sense of belonging, a sense of working for their own future, being in control of their own destiny, etc. So, you know, the empowerment. This also has effects on their health. There's research showing that, you know, that workers in employee-owned businesses have better health than non-employee-owned firms. But also, you're talking about, you know, that this is also good for society in general. And again, one of the other spillover effects is, but to participate in a worker cooperative, you are basically participating in workplace democracy, economic democracy, and this requires certain skills that not everybody has, but by being a worker owner, you develop these skills. And many worker co-ops will actually even provide training to help the employees how to participate in making these decisions in the business. And this isn't just good for the individual's own self-worth and for the business itself. It spills over into the local communities, where there's some evidence to show that this kind of increased capacity for participating in civic life and democracy spills over into the communities. So worker owners are more civically engaged. They volunteer more. They vote more. They're more politically active, etc., etc. And, you know, surely this can only be a good thing for society when we've seen the way that democracy has been going for the last, for the last 20 years or more.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, yeah, the state it has reached now, you know, it's an urgent mission that we rescue some of the, we get back some democracy, we bring back some control to the everyday people everyday people, yeah.
And that is, I mean, that health of society, because what I try to do is I really, in these things, I like to even reach out to even that conservative community, the really the more on the business side, is that it really, it's not just about, you know, wishful thinking and utopian dreams of labor. It really is about growing a good, solid business in the community. So somebody that is just really business focused, I think there is something for a worker co-op for them to think about, especially if they're going to build a new business or even convert an existing business, is that, you know, if you have a business that is, like you say, the longevity, when you have employees, they're just not widgets. You know, your employees are not widgets to control. They're participants and stakeholders in what you're building. Then that can make it for a business that is more representative of the overall plan of what you want, because you want to grow your business. So you don't, I know there's a lot of business owners out there that I believe would really, they've never heard of it. They've never necessarily thought about it, but I think there is value for the traditional business owner to look at a worker co-op model.
Oh, absolutely. I think in most businesses that the workers are the most valuable part of the business.
Imagine that.
Without the workers, then there would be no business. I think a lot of small business owners recognize this. But they don't, and they have a lot of small business owners have a great deal of concern for their workforce and do what they can for them, but I think there is also a great lack of awareness of this option that you could actually give some ownership over to the workers. And and this is becoming a rather important matter. I don't know if you've read about the increasing number of baby boomer business owners, of which there are a large number.
Oh, yes. Okay. And what regards to that? I haven't read anything specific to that.
Well, this wave of business owners, baby boomers, and are now many of them, some of them already have retired and sold their businesses or closed their businesses, and this wave is now hitting its peak. So, you know, millions of businesses in the United States over the next 10 years. Are going to be affected by this. And the great tragedy is many of these are good businesses, but the owners will either sell it to some kind of a corporation, who will probably run it down. They won't have anywhere near the same concern for the workforce. They might even just asset strip it or whatever. So sell it to a corporation is one option. Or they'll basically just close the business. They'll just let it run down. And this can, especially in more rural or less well-served neighborhoods in the urban environment, this can be a great loss to the community. Great loss in terms of service and in terms of the local economy. So this is, you know, quite an urgent matter and of quite high importance. And the option of converting these businesses to worker ownership is just makes so much sense.
Absolutely.
But there's still a huge lack of awareness amongst these business owners that this is even an option.
In my research, I came across a lumber company that is, I think, 120-year-old company that the grandson was running, he was nearing retirement age, and he decided to take his entire company of something like 50 employees and turn it into a worker co-op. And, you know, you think about a legacy company of 120 years, that is insane. And he wanted to do it because he wanted to know that legacy of the company was going to continue on, and it wasn't going to only be on the back of his family, but it could be on the employees. And the more he thought about it, and this, he had interview, I'll link to it in the show, is that he more he thought about it is that what a great legacy of the employees carrying this forward as owners.
Yeah, and that's a kind of common story. Well, not that they're 120-year-old businesses, but yeah, that's quite remarkable. But no, it's a common story that, you know, small business owners, especially small, medium business owners, with successful businesses and a strong commitment to their workforce, they want to do the right thing for their workforce, and you know they don't want to just they know that many of their workers have invested huge amounts into these businesses as well. They want to do the right thing. And keep this going as something that serves the community. And talking about your conversions, and you asked earlier about how many worker co-ops are in Arizona. I know there's definitely one, and it's a very successful one. It's called Technicians for Sustainability.
Oh, okay.
And it's a solar company in Tucson.
Okay.
They didn't start as a worker cooperative, started as a kind of a regular, more startup business. But they've been pretty successful. They always saw that what they were doing in business was more than just, they weren't in it just for making money. Of course, they wanted to make a living out of it, but so that's why they were interested in doing solar, because they had they thought it was important the business has a purpose beyond just making money. Yeah. But as they did this and they built up their workforce, they also realized, our workers are just as committed to this as we are, and we want them to share in this. And they spent a good 5 or 6 years working out how they could transfer, how they could convert this business to into a worker cooperative. And they eventually did this in 2014, I think. They first tried it in 2009, 2010. But they weren't ready to do it because it does take a lot of planning, a lot of financial planning. You were mentioning the print shop owner. You know, he has a lot of investment, a lot of value in the business, and he probably doesn't want to just give all that value to the workers. Well, this was the same with Technicians for Sustainability. So they spent a lot of time, you know, figuring out the financial strategies to make this happen, and it was also a learning process for the workforce. This is a common problem with conversions, is that the workers themselves often don't want to do it. They don't want to be owners for various reasons, but I think a lot of it is to do with that as a society, we don't program people about what this means. What being a business owner means, they are programmed to accept that there are a small number of owners, there are managers, and there are workers. And they just want to stay in their place within that division. But also, so it's a kind of, you know, it's a process, and a process of education for the workforce to build up their knowledge of what it means and their skills in how to make it work. What does a worker owner do that's different from being an employee in a hierarchical organization? It's quite different. There are different skills involved, and a lot more responsibility, et cetera. But I think once you go through that education process, it's scary at first, but if you do it through an extended period of time, and then the workforce will get there, and they will buy into it.
So what happens to the employee? So you get an employee that really ends up not being, it's like, oh man, I didn't realize this. I didn't realize I'd have all these responsibilities, and they quit. I've always wondered about that. What happens, because they have shares in this company, when they quit, do they forfeit their shares, or are they bought out, or how does that work?
So if they were in a worker co-op and they quit?
Yes.
Okay, so the way the shares work in a strict traditional worker cooperative, then everybody, all of the worker owners, you know, everybody should be a worker owner.
Okay.
All of the employees are worker owners. And to become one, you usually have to pay some kind of member equity into the business.
Gotcha.
So it could range from $10 to $10,000. And when you pay that money in, and when you leave, you get that money back. You don't get any interest on it. You just get back what you put in. So you're not really benefiting from the kind of conventional notion of the market value of the business.
But you receive the rewards while you're there and while you stay. So there's incentive for you to stay. I did not know that. That's very interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So there's other incentives. So you can receive your yearly bonus.
Okay.
And you can take that out and invest it, or you can leave it in the cooperative business and accumulate in an individual account or something like that. Now, this has changed a bit. So one of the big problems that worker cooperatives have is raising capital, because banks, investors don't understand worker cooperatives, and they don't have the legal structures and instruments to invest in cooperatives. Even if they wanted to, you know, they don't have the skills and the tools.
Gotcha.
To do it.
Yes.
For one thing, if it's an investment, an equity investment, then a cooperative, strictly speaking, is not allowed to give up external ownership.
It's
only the members who are allowed to be owners.
Gotcha. Okay.
So you can't sell equity in the business. So that has changed a bit. So there are actually now some cooperatives in the US who will allow, some cooperative statutes in some states that will allow you to be a cooperative and to sell some equity shares, but not a controlling share.
I got you. Okay. Yeah. And I had come across a video seminar through the U.S. Federation of Worker Cooperatives, and where they had people who were lenders on the show talking, and I'll include the link. And it's the National Cooperative Bank of Virginia, and so they're the Working World is another one. I think they're a financial institution, and they do consulting. So it sounds like there are, at least avenues to be able to provide funding, but it obviously is something that's a kind of a slow burn and mm-hmm. growing and yeah. popularity. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a growing number of these, financial organizations that will invest in cooperatives that specialize in investing in co-ops. Shared capital is another one. But they don't buy equity. They give loans basically.
Gotcha. Okay. And then, so, and I know we need to wrap it up here in about a minute, but I've got one more question is, as far as the pay. So the individual, salary versus, an investment. So a regular worker. So they're still able to get, say, $15-$16 an hour, right? In worker co-ops, or does it only work and they receive shares that are allocated monthly or biweekly? How does that work? How does a worker pay work in a worker co-op? I mean, is it?
Right. I guess most of them are hourly paid.
Okay.
Do you mean what the pay structure? How does it vary?
Yeah. How does it work with does pay structure any different with a worker co-op than a traditional company? I mean, do they go through an ADP and they get regular, or do they take shares of the company and receive that as distributions? I wasn't able to find out specifically on that. I'm just curious.
Well, they will receive like a base salary, or more often it's an hourly paid wage. Although that, the difference whether it's a salary or hourly paid is probably more reflective of that most worker co-ops in the US tend towards more kind of service work, which on the whole is hourly paid.
Okay. I gotcha.
So they'll receive, regular pay like any business. I think I mentioned earlier that on an annual basis, the co-op will pay out a bonus.
Gotcha.
Or a patronage, as they call it. And this is, a division of the surplus that the business has made, so it's after tax, wages, costs, all of that stuff, anything that's left, the surplus, then will be allocated to the cooperative. Some of that will be retained within the business, so basically reinvesting it back in the business.
Gotcha. Okay.
And the rest will be divided amongst the workforce. And some of them might do this on an individual basis. Everybody receives an equal share. Some of them might do it depending on how many hours you worked.
Okay. Gotcha.
Something like that.
Yeah. Perfect.
And they might pay part of this out to the workers, and they might retain some of it in an account for each worker.
Okay.
Which when you leave the co-op, you would get that money.
Oh, I got you. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
But it allows the business to leave some working capital in the business.
Absolutely. So you store, that's a way to store some funds. And, that's interesting. So, well, you really did answer pretty much every question just kind of a skimming the surface, because I know there's a lot more details with this, but you really helped illuminate some concern, not necessarily concerns, but questions that I had. And, the emergence is it's about technology, but it's about human interest in technology. And I think worker co-ops fit really well with this. So when you talk about increasing awareness, awareness, I really want to, as a series of episodes with the Emergence, is really focus on worker co-op, because I think it's at the core of what the mission of the Emergence is, to explore human potential. And, labor is at the very center of human potential. And if it's expressed correctly, we can do amazing things. So,
And I think with regards to, technological advances, there are some extreme challenges coming up with regards to labor and the future of work. And I think it's a very interesting question as to, how can cooperatives be a part of making this a just and fair and equitable transition.
Absolutely.
This future of, this myriad of technologies.
Oh, the robots are coming. They're coming for your job. Truckers, transportation are going to be the first hit, but and this whole notion of just teach somebody to code. I mean, the future of work is going to be a major, readjustment. And I think worker co-ops, it can be a major part of that. And I think they need to be a part of that. As we move forward in our societies, I really absolutely fundamentally believe employee-owned worker co-op is a core recipe for that. And it's not just like anything else. It's not a magic pill. It's not a panacea, but it's a core tool set. It's like a language that we can help bring labor together more purposefully. And on the side of the Emergence, I'm going to continue this. And I'd love to, I want to interview somebody with Mondragon in the future and different elements and different people. And I really want to continue to create more awareness of the importance of this as a tool set for society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. We need to be bringing these type of discussions to the forefront. I think ownership of these technologies is central to how we deal with them in an equitable way, and we don't bring about all kinds of catastrophes.
Yeah.
And co-ops are a big part of how to make that ownership more equitable. And if we're going to be allowing, if we're going to see less. Monotonous manual labor, then co-ops and can bring out a great allow people to be much more creative within businesses,
and that is so incredibly important.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful. Well, that's what a wonderful way to wrap it up.
Yeah,
that's just absolutely true. And, Nigel, I just can't tell you how much I appreciate you spending quality time with me. I know you've got a busy life there. So it's been amazing. And I really appreciate you spending time here on the Emergence.
Yeah, very happy to talk, Paul. And, happy to do any follow-up that you'd like to do. So,
okay. All right. Well, I'll talk to you a little bit after I sign off here, but just want to let everybody know, thank you for tuning into The Emergence, and we'll talk to you soon.